evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. The UN mission in Sudan cuts down on its operation.
Effective, my office is now operational from Khartoum, in line with the UNSCR 2429. Similarly, the new mission headquarters in Zalinje.
And China signs the South Sudan's revitalized peace deal.
China's government and the Chinese people will continue to do our best to support the peace process of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is condemning what it calls brutal sexual attacks on women and girls in the former Unity State. The special representatives of the Secretary General in South Sudan says the women and girls were brutally beaten, robbed, and raped. We'll bring details on that story in our show tomorrow. The joint United Nations African Union peacekeeping operation in Darfur has begun reducing its presence in the area in accordance with the UN Security Council Resolution 2429. The head of the UN mission in Darfur says there has been significant improvement of security in Darfur and some internal displaced persons have returned to their villages. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
UNAMID was formed under the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1769 on July 31, 2007, to bring stability in Darfur. The 12-month mandate was renewed several times due to continued fighting in the western part of Sudan. Violence between the government and armed movements in Darfur region has persisted for more than a dozen years, leading to civilian casualties and displacement of 2.5 million people, according to the United Nations. UNAMID Chief Ambassador Jeremiah Mamambolo says UNAMID has reduced its presence in some parts of Darfur and handed over several of its sites to the Sudanese government in North, Central, East, and West Darfur states. He says the Buram and Garaida sites in South Darfur will be closed before the end of this month, adding that UNAMID already handed over 3 community policing centers in Sector South in October.
The current reconfiguration process means significant changes in the mission's operations, particularly substantial progress in the latter of 2018. Effective, my office is now operational from Khartoum, in line with the UNSCR 2429. Similarly, the new mission headquarters in Zalinje is also operational effective the 1st of December 2018.
The head of UN and African Union Hybrid Force says the UN country team will work with the mission to continue monitoring the situation in Darfur. Ambassador Mamambolo says by the end of June 2019, UNAMID military personnel will be reduced to 4,050 and the police to 2,500 personnel. He says the mission has made substantial progress in supporting the rule of law and institutional capacity building in the area.
The construction of the Tete Rural Court in central Darfur has been completed. UNAMID is also currently constructing 3 rural courts in Abu Jabra, El Fadas, and Muhajiriya localities in East Darfur, and in Belayim in South Darfur. The mission has made concerted efforts to support capacity building training for prosecution staff and government of Sudan prison staff deployed in Darfur as part of its stabilization mandate.
Abdul Hamid Awad, a Sudanese journalist who has been covering the conflict in Darfur, says even if UNAMID pulls out or remains in Darfur, their presence was not making much of a difference. He says the international community is no longer paying much attention to crisis in Darfur.
In the presence of the UN armed forces, war was continuing. Violence such as rape and killing was happening, but they could not stop all this. During their time, rebellion was actively engaged in fighting, so I don't see any reason why they should remain in Darfur.
Howard believes Darfur will only be peaceful if the warring parties negotiate and bring an end to the conflict. The head of UNAMID admits that there is still some influx of new IDPs in Jebel Mara area since September due to continued fighting between the armed groups. But he says overall security in the region has improved and displaced people are going home.
Given the improved security in most of Darfur, civilians are reportedly returning gradually to their homes after years of displacement. However, Darfur still witnesses fresh waves of displacement, with a significant emphasis in Jebel Mara, where intermittent hostilities between non-state armed groups and regular forces continue to directly affect civilians in the area.
Mamambolo says the warring parties in Darfur should consider efforts by the African Union and international community to end violence through peaceful means. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
China has signed South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. Chinese ambassador to South Sudan says his government is ready to witness the implementation of the deal. IGAD's special envoy for South Sudan, who was at the signing ceremony, says the peace deal has made what he calls very big progress. The US, UK and Norway, known as the Troika, declined to sign the deal, citing a lack of inclusivity. Onan Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
China's ambassador to South Sudan, He Jiangdong, says his country has supported the South Sudan peace process since 2015.
China's government and the Chinese people will continue to do our best to support the peace process of South Sudan, along with IGAD countries, along with African Union, along with African countries, and also along with the international community. I hope, and I will say that I'm confident, that with the support of the international community and the regional countries, and with the support of South Sudanese people, the peace process of South Sudan will have moved forward, and the implementation of the revitalized ARCSS will be a very successful one.
In September, China and the Troika countries declined to sign the revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. The US, the UK, and Norway issued a joint statement in September, citing a lack of inclusivity. Ambassador Jiangdong explains why his government did not sign the deal.
China, the Chinese government, and the Chinese government representative also signed the ARCSS as a witness in the year of 2015. There's no obstacle for us to sign this document as a witness this time. The only technical issue is that because the text of the agreement, the current agreement, comes very late, almost at the same day of the signing on the September 12th. So at that time, we have yet to read the full context of the agreement.
IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan Ambassador Ismail Wise says there has been some progress in the implementation of the September peace deal.
The one you all remember is the activity that took place here in Juba on the 31st of October this year. That was a very good indication that this peace is meant serious by all the parties and stakeholders that have signed. It brought all the opposition groups, including His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar and all other leaders of the political parties to Juba. The government of South Sudan proved that they can secure the people and that they mean serious with the implementation of this project and peace agreement.
Machar left Juba shortly after a one-day ceremony marking the signing of the revitalized peace deal. Ambassador Wise says several committees tasked with implementing the deal have been formed.
All these committees are formed and are operational. The most important thing is that all these committees decided to implement this project and this agreement from and within Juba. No more meetings outside Juba. And this simply means also, it shows the trust and the confidence between the parties on this agreement and to one another. And this is really a very big step forward. for the people of South Sudan. Now, there is only one pending committee which has to be constituted, and everybody is also waiting for this. It is the TBC, Technical Border Commission. This will take place after tomorrow, Thursday, here in Juba.
Abraham Kwolnyon, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Juba and a scholar on U.S. foreign policy, says the Chinese move means nothing.
I doubt whether there was any great significance that might be able to come as China signed that, because always China has a concept of what they called non-interference policy. Okay, so whether the government of South Sudan is going to implement the agreement in letter and spirit or not, it is none of the concern of the government of China. But what is happening is that it will be able to give a great happiness to most of the people that China is now on board, and they were the great country to the current peace agreement. I think that is the significant that thing could be able to contribute to.
Kwol says there would be more impact on the implementation of the peace deal if the TRECA countries signed the deal as guarantors. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Some women in Yei River State are benefiting from local technology used to make stoves and charcoal. The technology introduced by the national NGO Titi Foundation targets to 15,000 vulnerable women so they can earn a living. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei Town.
The locally introduced technology known as fuel-efficient stoves and briquettes is the talk of the town among women who struggle to obtain fuel so they can cook for their families. Grace Aba makes local stoves made out of clay soil and displays several other partially dried stoves at the Mission Area Street in Yei Town. Speaking in her native Kuku language, Aba says she now produces and sells a few different varieties of handmade stoves, charcoals and flower pots in the town, and her financial situation has improved because of her stove business.
I am calling on my fellow women out there to learn this new technology so that we fight poverty and contribute to the development of this country. We need to tell men that women are also important.
Speaking in her native Kuku language, Radia Christine, Yei Town resident, says she's able to pay her children's tuition fee in school with the briquettes she sells, which she says reduces health-related risks associated to the cutting of trees.
Like in Nan, she's in Pujena training.
Since I have gotten some skills in the training, I am able to produce charcoals and sell them. I have a baby and I am able to pay my child in one of the expensive schools, hospitals, and I don't ask for money from my husband. This program will help us reduce deforestation, and if all women are using this technology, our forest will remain intact.
Regina Robina trained several groups of local women within Yei Town. She describes how the local technology works.
We mix clay soil we get from the swampy area, and we mix with the sawdust, and we mix with anthill soil to avoid cracking. We teach them, we are trying to tell them how they can budget in business side. If they make like this, they can take, they sell, you know, like in this one, they are selling 15,000, which is expensive, can help them to buy medicine, and in other cases, buying food. You can use charcoal for 100 to cook for 2 days.
Afsia Aaron, another trainer at the Titi Foundation, talks to a group of at least 50 women who turn up to attend his class on how to build stoves.
Now, after digging our foundation, so let's follow it very well. Are we all together?
Okay.
So I want us to be very active and follow everything what I'm going to do.
Aaron describes the significance of the local technology.
Most of the things are practicals. We are making our briquettes out of agricultural waste, such as sawdust, maize cob, maize stem, cassava peelings, sweet potato peelings. But so the cost of production is basically very low, and the technology is appropriate to a rural setting. Currently, if you see our women, they are suffering so much in the kitchen. the firewood they are using produces a lot of smoke. You find women are getting headache, others are suffering from lung diseases because of the smoke. But if we can bring for them something new like briquettes, which are clean, so we're improving their health.
Aaron says the new technology can also help young people make money.
I really advise the youth to come up and pick these technologies, because if someone can begin producing these stoves and producing briquettes, someone can save this for a living. These are good income-generating activities. So I'm calling upon all the youth, instead of crying out to their unemployment, let them come, they learn simple technology, they go out, they begin producing the stoves and briquettes, and they sell. Many people are earning living from this.
Stephen Lomude, project coordinator for the City Foundation, a local NGO operating near town, says the free vocational skills training helps women become self-reliant and reduce dependence on trees as the only source of fuel. He says it's also much safer for women.
Our women move far to the forest to fetch firewood, to cook, and on their way, there is a lot of risk that they incur, like snake bites, cases of rape. So we came up with this initiative to reduce on such cases, and also to reduce on forest deforestation. And also, it's like an income generation to our women, and become an income generation for them.
Lomude says they are targeting about 15,000 mostly vulnerable women to learn these skills. The fresh wave of fighting that broke out in July 2016 in South Sudan disrupted the livelihoods of many families in Ye River State. Most people closed their businesses and others fled to the refugee camps to Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin, reports from Ye Town.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an African country gets a brand new emergency center. Find out which country when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you where you thought you would be at this point in your life?
I dreamt I have an ambition of being a doctor, but it wasn't complete because of the situations that I was unable to manage to become a doctor. And then I chose to take another profession, which is also part of medical profession.
Yeah, my life is still going on. I've not achieved my goal because I'm a student. I'm a student at Catholic University, a fourth-year student, and I'm remaining with 1 year still. So my future is still on progress. I've not achieved my goal yet.
Not yet, though I have achieved a lot ever since I had my own goals in life. So I am still struggling, but I know I'll make it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today, we are talking about a new medical center in Africa. Cameroon is the recipient of a new public health emergency center constructed with the support of the U.S. Defense Threat Reduction Agency. The facility, which provides training for hospital staff and helps detect disease outbreaks, was inaugurated on Monday by Cameroon's Prime Minister. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Prime Minister Philemon Yang says the Yaoundé Public Health Emergency Operations Center will enable Cameroon to meet the objectives of the Global Health Security Agenda. The GHSA was launched in 2014 with the goal of making the world safe and secure from infectious disease threats.
We require the continuous availability of detection capacities and the rapid deployment of operational teams, as well as drugs and adequate logistics. This Public Health Emergency Operations Center is at the heart of this mechanism.
Cameroon joined the United States and 28 other nations as founding members of GHSA. The government committed itself to improving food safety to prevent the emergence and spread of drug-resistant organisms and to reduce the number and magnitude of infectious disease outbreaks. the new Emergency Operations Center cost $3.5 million to build. The U.S. Ambassador to Cameroon, Peter Henry Ballerin, said the U.S. has also assisted Cameroon through the construction of a national public health laboratory, development of Ebola and cholera preparedness plans, and supported the national surveillance systems in public and animal health.
The important thing is to be able to react quickly and efficiently, and this operation center will give Cameroon the opportunity to do that and to coordinate among different regions and with international authorities.
Dr. Etundi Mbala, head of disease control in Cameroon's Ministry of Public Health, says neighbors like Gabon, Chad, Equatorial Guinea and Central African Republic will also benefit from the services of the new center. He says threats of infectious diseases that loom over Central Africa and affect mostly the poor include cholera, measles, yellow fever, polio and tetanus.
Il est important que le Cameroun sache détecter très précocement ces risques.
He says the Public Health Emergency Operations Center the people of America have helped Cameroon to construct will enable the Central African States health officials to detect disease outbreaks at the earliest possible moment, respond effectively with eradication or riposte methods to save the lives of not only Cameroonians, but the people of the entire Central African sub-region. Cameroon has so far avoided the Ebola outbreaks that have hit several other African countries, but experienced a cholera outbreak in July that killed at least a dozen people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
From Yaoundé, we move to Bor, where residents of the Jonglei state capital are overjoyed that the power supply is back after a blackout that lasted about 6 years. The residents say streetlights will help improve security in town. The Bor power station was donated by the Egyptian government in 2010, but the authorities in the state capital shut down the station due to lack of service. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Earlier this year, state authorities handed over the power station to a South Sudanese private company called Nile Instrumentation and Control Engineering System to manage it. Bor Power Station Director Anyang Mayen confirms the station resumed operations this week.
We have started the power today on the 3rd of December 2018, and it shall be operational from 9 to 1 p.m. 4 hours a day. And from 2 to 5, we'll be connecting those who have no power, then we have to connect them from there. I would like to ensure our people that power has resumed and it will be continuing throughout.
Mayen says more than 1,000 residents have so far subscribed to the power company, and more customers will be connected. Before the station resumed services, a local power company was charging residents 5,000 to 7,000 SSP per month for electricity. It says its company will soon install meters to give customers a variety of choices.
When we receive the prepaid meters, I think it will be comfortable if that one is going to be there. And we are expecting the prepaid meters in the mid of December or by the end of it.
Bor town resident Michael Guy could not contain his joy when the lights came on. Guy says he hopes having electricity again will reduce prices of services that depend on the town's power supply.
The presence of the power in the main town is most important thing. For those who are business people, it will be easy for them to operate their local businesses. For example, as a citizen, we have been faced by so many challenges. For example, going to charge your phone sometime is very expensive. It reaches up to 50s. But if there is a public light or the power, then I hope the prices will reduce.
Bor resident Mator Mabur says he too is excited about having a reliable electricity supply, which he says will solve many problems.
As we have power now, the
the communication will be very easy, and the access to power will also be very easy, because when you don't have power and you don't have money to go and charge your phone later on, some other activity that you wanted to communicate with outside people will not be easy for you to communicate. And the light will also improve insecurity, because all the other areas which were dark and sometimes the other criminals used to hide themselves will also be lightened.
Guy Mabure and other residents are urging the management of Bor Power Station to introduce prepaid meters so that customers can afford prices for electricity that match their economic status. Mayan says the capacity of the generator supplying the power is 1,500 kilowatts. The Bor Power Station was donated by the Egyptian government in 2010. Earlier this year, state authorities handed over control of the power station to Nile Instrumentation Control Engineering Systems. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we move to Nairobi County, where county authorities have backed down again on its ban of matatu buses from the Central Business District as part of plans to ease what it calls the Kenyan capital's monster traffic. Nairobi Governor Mike Sonko cited the suffering faced by commuters, business people, and matatu operators yesterday when buses were turned away from the city center. But he said officials have to find ways to ease traffic congestion. This is the sixth effort since 2014 to restrict matatus from in Nairobi. But the matatu organization have significant clout and have managed to fend off the government's effort. Sonko said today he suspended the ban to let all parties try to work out an alternative solution. He urged increased use of carpooling and tighter controls over traffic violations to ease chaos. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Nambi by Sauti Sol. We have been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Nambe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're planning to be out of Juba Town, you can tune to us. Our shortwave frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.